welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Okay, so welcome to Turn the Page podcast with Stacy
and Jessica,
and we're on a Skype call with the talented author Claire McIntosh.
Welcome to Turn the Page, Claire.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for calling in. I always get excited because it says popping up that you're from the Great Britain, and I know from the Great Britain. I am so on fire today. So it's just really cool because we're calling from Long Island, New York, and it's like we're spanning distances and bonding over books.
Isn't it amazing? All these readers and writers all over the world, and we're all able to talk to each other so easily. It's fantastic. Yeah.
It really does make for things pretty amazing, and we welcome you, if in voice only, to beautiful Long Island, New York. How's the weather in Britain?
It's actually, for once, absolutely beautiful. We've got a bit of a heat wave going on, and we're very much enjoying it.
Oh, very nice. It's funny because the last time I was in Great Britain was 2013, and I was in Scotland, I think the second week in July, and it was hot and sunny every day, and everybody was very funny. They're like, oh, it's always like this here, ha ha ha. I'm like, I don't think so. But anyway, Stacy,
we are here to talk about your latest book that I unfortunately didn't finish it in time, but I am still reading it and I love it. It's, oh my God, After the End. I was like, where did I put my sheet of info? It's After the End, and it's just such a book you get sucked into. And I would have finished, but I'm in the process of moving, so that took some priority, so I apologize. But
no problem.
I just like, I want to just sit there and keep reading of the story of Pip, Max, and Dylan, and everything those goes on in Dr. Kelani. I'm just like, I know her as Layla, but as if she's a real person. But it's so good.
She's great. I love Layla. It's funny. Normally when I write my novels, the planning for me is all in the plotting. It's the who's the bad guy, what are the red herrings, where are the twists. And this book was really different. The preparation was all in the character. And so I must have spent 3 months just working through who these people were, where they came from, what house did Max grow up in, Chicago, how did he meet Pip? And then it was only when I really knew them, you know, as well as I know my own family, that I was able to start writing their story.
That's so interesting, because I haven't read your other books, but they're very popular in our library, and my coworkers have read them, and they're like, oh, it's such a good book. We even had, we did a book trivia, and one of the trivia questions was on one of your books, and I'm trying to remember what the exact question was. It's for I Let You Go, and it was like, I can't remember what the question was, but it was interesting, because I was just like, ooh, like, because just reading about the summary, I'm like, okay, to read list. And then we were asked, like, oh, do you want to interview? And I was like, yes. But I know that this isn't like your other books, but it's such a great read. And it's, to me, so far discussable. It's heartbreaking. It's about relationships. It's there's so much to talk about regarding it. So I really want to push it for a book discussion book.
That would be fantastic. I think it is. It's one of those books that just throws up so many questions, and that ultimate question, which is always great for a discussion, which is, what would you do, you know, if you were in that situation?
And it's a tough question, and makes you like, you can't just answer it right off the bat. You have to be like, what would this entail? And I was reading a few like of other people's reviews on Goodreads, and I agree with a lot of them of how the second part of the book is like Sliding Doors, the movie, of like, here's the one perspective of going this way versus what if this happened. And it made me think of a book that Jessica's actually read, My Real Children by Joe Walton. And Jessica, you want to talk about that book?
Oh, it's just a book about a woman who it's from two different perspectives she takes. If she makes one choice, this is how her life goes. And if she makes another mm-hmm. choice, this is how her life goes. And obviously there's give and take to everything. And it's a good read, and it's also heartbreaking. Claire and Stacey, would you like to frame
the book's about?
Yes, for our readers after the end. So the premise of the book is
the premise is that you're introduced to these characters, Max and Pip, husband and wife, and they have a toddler son who has a brain tumor. I forgot what the medical term of it was, and they are in the PQ, and they think, you know, things are going to be okay, and he's slowly getting better, and they realize it's not. And what do you do in that situation? One parent wants to do like palliative care, hospice. The other one's like, no, there's experimental treatment. And it's the perspectives of both, but you're also thrown in the perspective of the doctor that's been working with them. So that was really interesting to me. And there's a trial as well. I completely forgot to say that before, to determine what should happen, which parent and their wishes should be granted.
So this being different from your other books, Claire, how was it writing a story like this as opposed to past stories?
Well, as I said, it was very different in terms of the preparation. That with this novel, what was really important was that the characters were really real. But otherwise, you know, I know what you mean, that it's different in that it's not a thriller, but it's still centered on what I like to write about, which is ordinary people put in extraordinary situations. Mm-hmm. It's still suspenseful in a slightly different way. So from that point of view, it really wasn't that different. The tough thing about writing this book is that it was drawn on personal experience. And so the decision that Max and Pip have to make about whether or not their son should live or die is the decision that I had to make about my son 12 years ago.
And I can only imagine like the hard choice that you had to do for that. Like, I'm probably about to start crying over it, but I'm going to warn you, it's also because I'm pregnant and hormonal. So that happens a lot too.
it was the darkest mm-hmm. moment of my life. And I remember talking to the doctor when the doctor mm-hmm. delivered this terrible news that we had to make this decision. I asked what would happen if my husband and I disagreed, because, you know, like most couples, we disagreed on mm-hmm. all sorts of things and they never mattered before, but this mattered.
Yeah.
And the doctor said, you have to agree because the alternative is unthinkable. And we did agree. But when I came to write after the end, what I wanted to write was that unthinkable. What happens to a couple who love each other, mm-hmm. but who love their son more and want different futures for him?
And it's a great read, listeners. Totally recommend it. We have copies at the library. But what I found interesting is doing some research about it, of just like to some discussion questions to ask you, is that with doing research, because I know you said this is based off, you know, you've had this experience of having to make this decision, but was one of the things that you looked into regarding like different treatments or something? A lot of people in reviews brought up the Charlie Gard case that happened a few years ago.
Yeah.
Did that influence you at all?
It did absolutely. Charlie Gard and also Alfie Evans more mm-hmm. recently, both children who made headlines the world over. What struck me most about those cases was how awful it was that while these parents were going through this horrific personal trauma, they were also having to deal with the intrusion of the press and of the judgment from the general public, who knew mm-hmm. nothing about the case, but were very vocal about their opinion about what should happen. And so in After the End, Max and Pip have to deal with that intrusion from the media and from people, from protesters, in fact, who come and gather at the hospital because they feel so strongly about what should happen to somebody else's child.
Yeah, it's big in the news of just everyone, whether on something like Facebook or other social media, they get a news article or a story that could happen either, you know, home or abroad, and just become very opinionated. And I was reading, when I was reading about the Charlie Gard case, of all the scrutiny and all the things that happen. And, you know, then you have world figures jumping in and talking about it and discussing it as if, you know, they have the opinion and this is like my say, even though it's not your child or family. I thought it was interesting, and I'm excited.
Isn't it something that people do anyway? Like, you know, when you're pregnant, as you'll know, people start just telling you what
you
should be drinking coffee, or make sure you breastfeed, or make sure you do this, or you don't do this, or you know, everybody seems to feel that they are able to tell you what you should do.
Oh, definitely.
With your family, with your children. And so this is sort of an extension, I suppose, of that feeling.
And you know what, even after you have your children, everybody has an opinion about what you're doing, you know, what you're doing wrong all the time. Like, nobody's ever like, oh, good job, you know, I understand whatever. And I'm like the type of mom, I like to lift other moms up, because it's hard. It's really hard. And it changes, as I'm sure, you know, as like the couple in the book find out, you know, it changes your relationship in ways that you don't expect when you come together to create a baby, a child. You know, like, people will just blurt out their opinion about what you're doing wrong, like when you're walking to the pizza parlor.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, we do seem to have this need to interfere, and of course sometimes, as in the case of such a horrific decision that Pip and Max are making, someone does have to intervene. The judge, the legal framework, has to step in, because otherwise what happens? We've got two parents at loggerheads. I think it raises some interesting questions about who should make those decisions when the patient has no voice. So whether it's a child, or whether it's perhaps a disabled person, or someone at the end of their natural life, a very old person, who chooses? Is it the patient? Is it the doctor? Is it a judge?
And it's something that you also see, like, aside from in books, you could see that on more TV shows than movies, that I've noticed, especially medical dramas. Like, you know, it could be, there was a show that I watch, and it's called New Amsterdam. And it's supposed to be based on a real life hospital in New York City. And one of the things is, there's this man, he has cancer. He's a ward of the state, but he left his care. He's like, I want to live my life. I met this woman. I'm very happy. And they had to have like a court hearing in the hospital about what to do for him. And, and it was just interesting. I was like, the fact, but you're right. You need someone to have the voice for someone that might not be able to have their voice, but for whatever means. But
yeah. And it's a conversation, I think, that needs to be had, because, you know, this is a terribly morbid thought to have, but you never know when you might lose that voice. And so actually it is important to have these sorts of conversations about what you want to happen, who you want to have that sort of power of attorney, to, just in case.
And it definitely happens, because I've had my parents, who are healthy and doing well, to the best of my knowledge, have had that convo with me. They're like, we just want to let you know, like, in case anything happens,
yeah,
here's what my mom refers to as her death book. of who I call, all this info. And I'm like, but you're healthy. Why are you telling me this? She's like, just in case.
And
you
my,
never know.
My grandfather used to have, and you know, when we were kids, we used to roll our eyes at him, but he used to have what we would call the great beyond talks, where he'd be like, well, when I go to the great beyond, there's going to be this that's going to go to this person, and then, you know, this, and then your parents will take, and this is taken care of. And we, like, you know, like, we didn't want to hear this, but it's important.
Yeah. Brings to the forefront overlooked. That's the word.
And I think maybe we're more comfortable talking, having those conversations when it comes to elderly people.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
We are very uncomfortable talking about children. We're uncomfortable when children die. We don't have the words for it. We can express our condolences when someone's lost a parent, mm-hmm, or a partner. Mm-hmm. We have the language for that. But I know when my son died that, mm-hmm, people didn't have the words. And because they didn't have the words, they either said nothing or they said something fairly horrific. You know, they tried to find platitudes. We're very clumsy, I think, when it comes to that particular area.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you brought up talking about the platitudes, because the other day I was just reading a scene where Max goes outside to like take a breath and sees one of the other parents, Liam's father, Connor, and it's just like, it's gonna be okay, like, it's hard. And just even between them, who have children that are in the PQ for different reasons, to try to connect and be like, okay, like, that I thought was interesting, those relationships as well, because, mm-hmm, he even says to Pip, he's like, we don't really have much in common except our kids are here, like. And she goes, but that's the starting point, and then you will build, you know, friendships and relationships off of that. I thought that was very nice she said that, but I was like, I can't imagine, because you're at a loss for words for something in a situation like that.
You are absolutely, and I mean, Pip and Max deal with it in very differently, don't they? Mm-hmm. Pip seeks solace in the other parents, and she really finds strength in that. And Max kind of kicks up against it. He talks to her about how he no one else travels his path. Only, mm-hmm, they know what they're going through. And he's right in some respects. But I think I am probably more like Pip. I think I want to share more, and I want that support of other people.
I feel like I'm like that too, because I remember when I first found out I was pregnant, people are like, you can't say anything, keep it a secret. And I was like, well, God forbid something happens, I want my close, like, I need my support network. I'm gonna tell who I want.
I think that that's also why a lot of people are, especially now, talking about difficult subjects, and it's important to have books about, you know, unfortunately, you know, it's terrible that people have to go through this. But I think there's a lot of empathy in, you know, reading about situations, and maybe even, I mean, and please correct me if I'm wrong, catharsis for people who've gone through it, to feel like they're not alone.
I think absolutely. I've been really moved by the messages that I've had from readers who, some of whom have made very similar decisions about, mm-hmm, children or other loved ones, but also from people whose decisions weren't life or death decisions but have still changed their lives. And that was something that I really loved about thinking about this book, planning this book, was that we all have decisions that we make that completely change our lives. And you don't always know at the time that they're going to change your life. Mm-hmm. It might be something as simple as whether you take a job or not, or whether you go into a relationship with someone, or perhaps moving states. We have these moments in life where we stand at a crossroads and you have to decide which path to take. And I love looking at those moments, those pivotal moments, and examining how people make those decisions, and more importantly, how they make a life for themselves afterwards.
It's definitely something I think it's good to read, because it's eye-opening and it helps you understand people better. Like, Thrillers are all fun. I'm a huge thriller fan.
Yeah, me too.
I know Jessica
we,
is
we're
too.
Both, especially, but I don't know why, but there's nothing like a summer thriller, but still.
But to read something like this that gets you to, you know, delve into psychology, humanity, and
emotions.
Be able to do something. Emotions. It's, I just, after reading it could be heartbreaking, but I'm like, I'm so glad I read this. Like, it gives you new perspective. It makes you think. And I like books that make me think and want to learn more or something like that.
I think one of my friends refers to it as a book hangover, where, yeah, you know, it's like you're still processing everything with your entire body.
Yeah. It affects
well, me. I can tell you that I finished writing this book about a year ago and I'm still processing it. So,
but it's a great book. I'm excited to go through your backlog of books because I know you also have a memoir out, but I saw it. I didn't even know that. I knew you had your thrillers and now I'm excited to read your memoir about country life.
Yeah, that's very different. That's all sort of anecdotes of family life in the country. So a great one for mums, that one.
Oh, that's now I'm excited. Even more excited, I should say, because when I was like, oh, let me see what like her other books are, because I knew pretty much I Let You Go and I See You. I didn't remember the title of Let Me Lie, but I was like, oh, I was like, more things to read. Exciting.
Was it like the writing something that's nonfiction versus fiction, was the process, did you find it more difficult or did you find it just complete like different?
It was I suppose because it's my life, it was relatively straightforward. You know, it wasn't as though I was writing a non-fiction
like
book.
You don't have to develop characters because...
No, I suppose I don't. Although there's still the same process of making sure they're real to the reader. So I'm still painting a picture. It's just that it's not coming from my imagination. But that book was, it was part of a project, so a lot of it was already written. It was a collection of columns that I'd written for a magazine, and I the book came about as part of my support for a charity in Oxford in England. So my fee for that, my advance for that book, I donated to the hospital where my children were born, and they bought fetal monitoring equipment for the maternity wards with it.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
It was a really nice thing to be able to do.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Well, we're definitely going to recommend After the End to everybody. Yeah. And Claire, we're so grateful that you took the time to speak with
us.
Yes.
Oh, it's been great. Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Have a good day, Claire.
Enjoy the beautiful UK weather.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're going to close this chapter of
Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.